Hello, this is going to be a different type of episode. We're lucky to get a lot of big names in the pod, but you probably wouldn't have heard of the people we're about to talk to on this episode.
Yeah, this is the first episode of the Rugby Union Weekly podcast that you've stumbled across. That's Hugo Monya. He used to play for England, the Lions and Harlequins. And I'm Chris Jones.
And this is special for Sport Relief.
Yeah, and everyone we speak to on this episode is a beneficiary of Sport Relief and the Try for Change programme. You've been doing your bit for Sport Relief, Hugo?
Yeah, I was at Gatwick Airport actually last Friday, and it was chaotic. There was loads of guys involved, Sally Gunnell, Colin Jackson, Max Whitlock, who he won gold in Rio, I think, myself, Louis Smith, Chris Hoy, loads of guys.
How did you find yourself in that Olympian company?
Well, I was with Ben Foden as well.
So a couple of rugby players and a lot of Olympians.
Just a couple of token rugby players and loads of other really good
sports. What were you doing?
So we were just raising awareness of Sport Relief as well as like collecting some donations. So Ben Foden and I, our duty was to go around and help people with their luggage. And by doing that, we're hoping to get some donations. We had lots of compliments about the pod also, I have to say, at Gatwick. People flying in from all over the world, but a really good day, really fun way of creating a decent message.
And so we're going to speak to people on this podcast, Hugo, aren't we, who are playing at the grassroots or are helping with the grassroots and are just doing things with rugby to try and help improve and change people's lives.
Yeah, absolutely. I think people will get to hear and understand the power of sport. We talk about it a lot. It's almost become cliche, but it's great to hear people where it's truly affected their lives.
Yeah, and we can get a bit holier than thou about rugby's values, but you'd like to think that they've had a massive positive impact on your life. What have you got out of rugby, do you think?
I've got a huge amount out of rugby. I always say this, and my story is probably not your typical rugby story. I was a North London lad who wanted to play for Arsenal, who ended up moving out of the city and went to school in the country. Went to a school called Lord Wandsworth College, made famous by Johnny Wilkinson. I rocked up 13 years old. I was literally the only black kid at school. And for me, rugby was my way of... It was a way for me to make friends and just feel comfortable. I was way out of my comfort zone. It was the first time I'd ever really left my mother for an extended period of time. So rugby's done a lot for me. It's moulded me as a person. It's given me a good career. I never thought at the age of 19 I'd be able to travel the world. Absolutely not. I mean, it's given me so many opportunities. I mean, the fact that I'm sat here with you, but you also played rugby to a fairly decent schoolboy level, didn't you?
For the purpose of the tape, Hugo said that with a smile on his face. No, it's made me much, much richer. No, it hasn't. No, I think I just played schoolboy level, university, 13, but university, and then for my club, Cater Soul Boys, in level 7, which for a kind of not a particularly good player was a really decent standard. But, you know, it is a bit of a cliche,
but
as you
regardless
say.
Regardless of the level,
it's all that both, stuff around it, isn't
we
it?
We both enjoyed it. To equal measure.
Do you know what, Hugo? I genuinely think that the feeling you get after you've played a hard match, and whether you've won or lost, and you get into your shirt and tie, whatever you've got to wear, and you go up to the clubhouse, and imagine whether you're playing for Harlequins or for England, going to the function, or playing at the level I played, or even the level below the level I played, which is pretty low, you get that same feeling of walking up into the clubhouse, a real feeling of accomplishment because
completely.
You've worked hard for 80 minutes, you've put everything on the line, hopefully, and whether you've won, lost or drawn, you do have this real feeling of camaraderie, of teamwork. It really does make a difference regardless of the level you play. So we're going to speak to a lot of people who have found rugby have changed their lives for the better.
I completely agree. The memories which I miss are actually just been sat in the change room, been sat at the back of the coach on your way to a away trip. Those little parts of rugby are the things that you'll forever miss.
Well, that feeling when you're sitting in the changing room after and you've won a game and you just don't get changed for ages.
Yes. Yeah,
you just sit there for hours and you just don't want to get changed because you're just like, this is awesome.
And you're just chatting. You're just chatting, smiling on your face. You're exhausted, you're knackered, you're tired, you're beaten up, you're banged up, you're bruised, but you're still just thrilled. You're really happy. But then I've been sat in changing rooms where everything's gone wrong. But then I still look around and they're the guys you're relying on because I ring my mum after a loss. She'll just turn around and say, don't worry, son, you're still my champion. I'm like, you just don't get it.
I dropped three highballs.
Yes, you don't get it. So it is, they're the people that you rely on. And, you know, it's not too dramatic to say that, you know, they're not just teammates, they're more than that. They become a little family and you rely upon them. They're the people that you trust. You have to trust them. You have to rely on the person you left, the person you're right. And it's a really strong bond, a really good emotion.
Five Lives Rugby Union Weekly.
The term rugby values is something we hear a lot about. What does that mean? What are your top rugby values?
I'd have to say number one's got to be respect. And that's for everyone, whether it be officials, players, parents, vice versa. Teamwork, it's a team sport. I think that's incredibly important. It's one of those things which also relate into life. And the third thing's got to be enjoyment. We do it because we enjoy it, right? So, that'd be my top three.
Now, we're going to talk to a couple of people now from Manchester Metropolitan University. Thanks to Sport Relief and Try for Change, they're able to run a project called Kicking Crime into Touch.
Okay, well, it's time to bring in our first guest. It's Deborah, who's a senior lecturer in criminology. How are you doing?
I'm great, thank you. Thanks for having us.
Deborah, you are an expert in criminology. We're a rugby podcast. Are there any criminology podcasts that you listen to that we need to be worried about in the charts?
No, I'm quite keen on Dirty John, but that's another story.
What's that all about?
Dirty John's a podcast that talks about, it's an American podcast that talks about crime and stalking, serial killers, that kind of thing.
Oh, listen to Serial.
You're about 2 years late with
Serial. I know. I finished it last year. It's brilliant.
It's not about serial killers. It's that's not what the title's about. No, but it is about, it's about a guy
couple,
who's...
A couple of kids, a girl goes missing.
Yeah, guy's in prison and whether he was rightfully or wrongfully accused and convicted. It's very
superb.
Interesting. Very,
okay.
Very good podcast.
A poor ending to it. But anyway, have a listen to it. Come back on the pod and we'd love to hear a debrief.
Okay, we've also got Rob on the line. Rob is head of rugby at the University of Manchester. Both of you, Deborah first, why do people commit crime and how can a sport like rugby help them not to go down that route?
It's a known fact that men do commit the majority of crime, much more than women do. I think for young men who are the ones that are going to be part of this project, I think some of it is boredom. I think some of it is lack of opportunity. They want the trainers. They want the clothes that working young lads might have. So I think some of it is about attaining money. I think that's one reason. I think some of it is to accomplish masculinity. So I think some of it is about engagement. I think it's about building aspirations. I think a lot of them don't have good, strong role models either. Mm-hmm. Sometimes coming from single-parent families, dad's not around. They don't really have those strong masculine role models. And I think a sport like rugby has the ability to say, look, this is how you can be a man, but here's how you can do it without being a burglar or a robber or any of those kind of things. And when you're on the rugby pitch playing rugby, you're not out on the streets. Because sometimes the values of sport can be the same values on the street, like respect, for example. But it's about changing the idea of respect and making it more of a positive idea of respect rather than respect through, say, violence or crime.
And Rob, from your perspective as a rugby coach, what can you do and how difficult can it be from your position to help people that might need some really quite careful steering in the right direction?
Yeah, to echo something Hugo said earlier, is we've got to work within our core values of rugby, respect being, for me, the most important one. Rugby's unique for me and it separates itself from any other sport in that you really do go hell for leather against one another and shake each other's hand afterwards, applaud each other, you have a tunnel, etc. You know, if we can show and inspire these young lads and to give them aspiration, and also it's got to be fun. It's got to be fun. We're under no illusion, you know. Some of these lads will never have seen rugby before, will never have picked up a rugby ball. So it is baby steps, you know. We've got to show them how to have fun in small-sided games to start off with. But the challenge is something we absolutely take on because I know and I've seen it firsthand through my own experiences, the positive impact it can have on young people.
Is the hardest bit getting them to play rugby in the first place and then does it from there, rugby almost looks after itself? I mean, if you've got someone who is affiliated to a gang who just doesn't see any interest or...
Yeah.
Any positives in being on a rugby pitch, getting them there in the first place must be
absolutely
much easier said than done.
Yeah, for sure. And that's why, so the programme looks a little bit like this. You know, we've got state-of-the-art facilities at the university. So we're going to show them the strength and conditioning room, first of all. Which lad, tell me a lad that doesn't like lifting weights, that doesn't like being fitter, stronger, faster.
Chris Jones.
But we've got to show them first and foremost that actually health and fitness can be fun. Let's challenge them and maybe a bit of competition on there. Let's just get them comfortable first and foremost, just being with us in that environment. Let's go and see who can lift the most. And lads love that. And then we'll do some sprint-type exercises outside, short bursts, challenges, fun challenges. And we'll slowly introduce the rugby ball. It isn't going to be easy. We know that. But I think if we get them to trust us then they'll start to listen and then they'll start to hold that ball, so to speak.
I think ultimately what we need to do is take away those kind of labels that these young people are actually criminals. I think once we start doing that, there's a real tendency to stereotype and criminalise. I think what we do is we see them as lads on a pitch. And we say to them, you've not had the best start. You know, you come from disenfranchised areas. You might have a lot going on at home. Here, this can be a new kind of family for you. This can be a new fraternity for you. Here's a rugby ball. Yeah, you're going to throw it around. You're going to score tries. You're going to do all those things that rugby does. But behind that, you've got someone like Rob who's going to mentor you, who's going to talk to you about what you might need to do. You've got someone like me who might be able to say, right, come along, we'll do a little bit of CV writing. You might be able to get a job as a coach. Here's some qualifications, which is one of the beautiful aspects of this project, is that because it's university-based, we can start giving them accreditations to really build up their CV and really build their aspirations and, you know, turn their lives around a little bit.
Generally, better people can make better rugby players. We're going to show them how to eat healthily, healthy lifestyle, healthy mind type thing.
We know that the Manchester has one of the highest crime rates for young people in the whole of the UK, so it's best place to do this. We also have a great sporting culture in Manchester, rugby and football and boxing. You know, young people need to be a part of that. They live in a city where sport is so, it's everywhere around them, and they need to be able to access that.
If I could just make a difference to one of these, if we can show them a pathway, if I can get one of these to join a local rugby club, if I can inspire one of these to play rugby sevens, you know, it's an Olympic sport now, you know, there's role models everywhere. It's a career now. If I can get one of these to perhaps want to go along to a rugby club and coach some other kids, what a story that would be.
Absolutely. We speak so much about the kids when we talk about these kind of projects. It's amazing what the two of you guys are doing, and you're certainly not alone. But how do you guys keep your energy levels high to be able to essentially front this and be great role models to these kids? Because without your energy, without your excitement, without your enthusiasm and involvement within this, the kids aren't going to be able to reflect that.
I do a lot of sport myself. I think we're both behind the scenes, we're both spokespeople, aren't we, really? Yeah. Rob, I mean, do you still play rugby?
Bad injury cut my rugby career short. And I think, you know, that's probably energised me. I didn't know where to go. You know, rugby was my life up to probably, the age of 23. But I found coaching and I found helping people achieve what I didn't quite achieve is a passion of mine, into whatever level that may be, into teaching, into coaching, into refereeing. We want these people to have an idea of how important it is to warm up correctly, injury prevention, mental preparation. You know, we want them to come and smash some tackle bags, and if there's aggression there, let's take it out on that. And sometimes that's probably when I stopped playing. That was something, being open, I probably suffered with. You know, how do you release that aggression, that energy? Well, I always did it through rugby. How do you do it when rugby's not there? And perhaps that will help them.
There's a lot of frustration amongst young men, not just in the city of Manchester, but UK. And I think a project like this really does allow for that kind of cathartic release. It transmutes that aggression into something really positive, something really healthy. I mean, what we really want to see at the end of this is we want to see an increase in young people's health and well-being, whether that's through nutrition or through mental health. We know depression and suicide is really high amongst young men. This is something that we want to try and tackle. We know that offending behaviour can be really high as a result of being disenfranchised. We want them to feel excited about the places that they live in. And sport has a really good way of doing that.
It is so important to be proud of where you come from. Yeah. Someone will ask me, Hugo, where were you born? I'll go, North London. The first thing I'll say, I'm an Arsenal fan. You know, if you're from Manchester, you're red or you're blue. Or
yeah.
To be able to get these guys to feel part of a team, to feel loved, to be mentored and energised by the likes of you will massively help them. I can see so many positives in what you guys are doing.
Yeah, if they can come down and look forward to seeing my little chubby face. and you know, come in and just, actually, I want to turn up this week. I want to beat my three rep max, or I want to show Rob that I've been practicing that left hand pass. But if they're looking forward to coming down, I think that's job one done. And then it's just improving them bit by bit by bit.
I mean, 16 weeks is a short amount of time to turn around a young person's life in some respects, but in others it's not. I think if you can provide the right role model and you can raise those aspirations of young people, I think 16 weeks can be, put it this way, 16 weeks on a rugby pitch is better than 16 weeks in jail. And that's what we're looking at here. This is what we want to do. We want to say, look, this is what you can be doing, and this is how we're going to do it for you, and we're going to help you.
Fantastic stuff, guys. Been brilliant having you on. Really best of luck with,
this
fantastic
us.
Project.
Thank you
very much, guys. Crime into touch with Deborah, Senior Lecturer in Criminology, and Rob, the Head of Rugby at Manchester Metropolitan University. All the best, guys, and thanks for coming on.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Cheers, guys.
Five Lives Rugby Union Weekly.
Right, Chris, I want to talk to you about a foundation called Sporting Memories, and we got Tony here to tell us a little bit about it. Tony, how are you getting on?
Hi, Hugo. I'm great. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad at all, thanks. We've been reading up on all the great work which you've been doing, but tell our podcast listeners exactly what Sporting Memories is.
Well, what we do is we use the history and heritage of rugby to help connect older people living with issues such as dementia, depression and loneliness. And we're working with younger players to give them the confidence and the skills to connect with older people in their communities using the power, the history and the heritage of rugby.
It's a really good idea, Hugo, this, isn't it? Because if you think about sometimes, you know, we've gone and visited grandparents and older people, friends of grandparents and everything, and there's not always something to talk about because of the generation gap. But sport is that concept that binds everyone. Tony, I imagine that is at the basis of this idea, that whether it's sport in the 1940s, 50s, 80s, 2000s, 2010 onwards, people are sharing sporting memories.
Absolutely. And it's a really common language and a comfortable introduction to conversations. So, you know, it could be first and foremost, are you a rugby fan? Yes, I am. What was the first game you went to see? And then it leads to further conversations of, did you play the sport? How did you get introduced to it? When did you make your first team debut? Through to, well, when did you score your first try at Twickenham against Scotland?
that's Hugo.
that's pretty much my career. Thank you very much. But Tony, it's an incredible concept and idea. I love what you're doing, but what gave you the inspiration to start it? Why get involved?
Reminiscence therapy, which is what it's based on, has commonly been used with older people, particularly those living with dementia, for many years. It's a recognised therapy, but sport has never really been used as a subject. We're a nation of sport fans and lovers, and we have such a rich history and heritage to use and to utilise. So we founded the foundation to really try and test out the concept of would this work and would it help to reduce loneliness and bring generations together.
My grandfather suffered with Alzheimer's. And when you look at people who have Alzheimer's and dementia, do you think that even though there are lots of things they can't recall, sport and things that have mean a lot to them in the past, they can find solace in those memories because it's been such a part of their lives in the past?
Yeah, on the whole, sport generally holds really positive memories of togetherness, of community, of shared experiences. And people living with dementia, although it's an awful illness and it's an awful condition, people can still live very high quality lives with the condition. And it's about playing to people's strengths and helping to give them confidence. And using sport to help trigger those really fond memories is a really effective thing. But it's also really powerful when we bring generations together. And it's almost like the health issues, the social issues are left at the door. And when everyone comes in and starts looking at the images and the videos and the memorabilia, it just transports people into a really, really good place where they can share those common interests and love of rugby and of sport.
I communicate with my dad about rugby, probably 95% of the things we talk about. And, you know, you do end up in families and friends and different generations, you do communicate and find common ground in sport and in this case, rugby. And Hugo, we've got quite a young audience. Part of our audience is probably under the age of 30. So maybe through the podcast, we can say to people, look, go and visit your grandparent, go and visit your mum or dad. And you know, sport is that thing that can bind everyone, isn't it?
Absolutely. Of course it is. But Tony, you didn't tell us the website. So what website can people log on to get involved?
It's sportingmemoriesnetwork.com. And if your listeners do go and visit an older relative or a friend and want to record a memory, they can actually upload it to the website. There's a free app, Replay Sporting Memories, which you can use to upload new content to the website. And there's some cracking memories on there as well. Jason Leonard, Bill Beaumont, amongst others, have shared their own personal memories. And we'd love to get yours, Chris, and yours, Hugo's, on there as well.
That's brilliant. I'll tell you what, if you're anything like me, whether you're listening to this or not, Chris, you might be able to sympathise with me. I get a lot of stick for watching a lot of rugby at home. So if you're one of those guys, you need an excuse to go and watch a rugby match, get that DVD out. For me, it'd be Living the Lions 2001. Go and see an older person. Bring any kind of DVD and have a chat. Have a chat, watch it, and tell us about how it went. Send us an email at rugbyunionweekly@bbc.co.uk. Thank you.
Brilliant. Cheers, guys.
Thanks a lot, Tony. Great to have you on.
Thank you.
Five Lives Rugby Union Weekly.
Hello, guys. How are you getting on?
Very well, thanks. And yourself?
Yeah, not too bad. Thanks for joining us on the pod.
No problem.
Cameron, you're a player and Gareth is your coach, is that right?
That's correct, yeah.
Cameron and Gareth from Manchester Spartans, RUFC. Tell us about Manchester Spartans.
Manchester Village Spartans is a rugby club based up in Sale in Manchester. We've been around since the late 90s, and we were set up predominantly for gay and bisexual men to play rugby.
So all the research that's been done says that gay and bisexual men are more likely to suffer poor mental and physical health and less likely to take part in sport than their peers. Would you say that was true?
I think generally, yes. I think obviously we're trying to do something to counter that. Personally, I think the biggest challenges probably stem from school. I think a lot of sort of gay and bisexual men probably felt a little bit like they weren't welcomed into team sports, always the last ones to be picked at school potentially. And I think that probably has a bit of a hangover into their adult life as well. I personally was quite sporty, but I had other sort of gay friends at school who probably weren't and probably didn't feel like they were as welcome as they could have been.
Cameron, how did you get into rugby yourself?
I didn't really do it in high school. Anytime there was any sort of sports, I tried to not do the football on the rugby side of it. I just didn't really have any hobbies after doing cadets for about 5 years. I left when I was 18 and someone just suggested to me, why don't I try the Spartans? I thought, yeah, why not?
What kind of player are you, Cameron? What position are you playing in?
I play flanker.
What kind of flanker is he, Gareth?
He's really improved, actually. Cameron's only been with us for probably about 12 months now. But yeah, he's really good and likes to get stuck in.
Has it helped with your confidence?
Yeah, I'd say so. Partly beforehand, I don't really know many other, I guess, gay men or anything like that. And it was just friends who I met from college and high school that I just sort of hung around with. So I didn't really have anyone outside there to converse with.
We had a long chat on a previous episode, I'm not sure whether you guys listened to the podcast or not, about potential problem with homophobia in rugby. Would you say that it was there?
I'd probably say it's still there to a certain degree. I think rugby union is probably leaps and bounds ahead of most other sports, to be honest. But I do see, even at the grassroots level, there is still an element of homophobia, whether that's purposeful or not. I think it might just be people having it in the back of their mind and not really know that they're particularly homophobic. But we do see it occasionally. Generally not on the pitch, but on the sideline, you hear people, you know, start to shout things like, you're not going to get beat by a bunch of... and then they stop themselves. And
really?
Yeah. We've had other people on the pitch who've complained to the referee of being called faggots and gay boys and all kind of different things. And whether that was targeted because we're a gay team or whether that's just something, a flippant comment that somebody made and then realised, I don't necessarily know. But I'd probably say the vast majority of teams don't even know that we're a predominantly gay team now. And they might find out in the clubhouse afterwards that some of the players are gay, but more often than not, they don't really notice on the pitch.
Cameron, have you ever had anyone say anything to you that's offended you on the pitch?
Because I'm quite young, so growing up, I don't think I'll have experienced anywhere near as much as homophobia as some people might have 10, 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. Like, I guess in school, I was more bullied for being ginger than I was for being gay, I guess.
And how old are you now, Cameron?
I'm 20.
And when did you come out?
I'm guessing it's around when I was 13, 14, around year 8 and 9.
How was that for you as an experience?
I don't know, I guess like the first week was a bit rough, but then after that, I don't think many people cared.
From the stories I've heard in the early days, I think a lot of clubs were a little bit hesitant to play against us.
Seriously,
to start off with. I mean, we're
what do you think they were fearing? Sorry to interrupt. I mean, I just find that really strange as a concept that some teams were hesitant to play against you because you're gay or bisexual?
I don't really know, is the answer. I think the vast majority of rugby players that I know are very accepting, and as long as you get on the pitch and you put somebody on the backsides tackling or score a try, they're not really bothered whether you're gay, straight, bisexual or what. Well, there used to be certainly a lot more. Still that attitude that maybe gay men shouldn't be playing rugby, maybe that we're a load of mincing queens and we don't have a place on the rugby pitch. But we teach them and show them when we get on the pitch that that's not the case.
But the very fact that there is a team like the Spartans that is gay friendly and very open and accepting and predominantly people from the LGBT community, does that show in itself rugby's got a fair way to go? Because if in a perfect world, there wouldn't need to be any club that had to make those kind of parameters, if you know what I mean.
The way I see it is we are a place for people to feel comfortable and not necessarily, you know, it's warranted that we need to have an LGBT team. I kind of use the analogy of things like London Welsh and London Irish. You know, those teams were set up for those particular communities. You know, you don't have to be Welsh or Irish to play on
it's
those teams.
It's still an open club.
It's still an open club,
sure.
But it was set up with the provision for those particular people. You know, for us, it's more a case of having like-minded people to go out with on a Saturday night after the game and have somebody who understands your sexuality and what that can bring in terms of general team ethos and not necessarily all been about sexuality, but just being comfortable in your own skin and comfortable talking to people about, you know, your relationships.
Did you hear Mathieu Bastereau's comments early this year?
I did indeed, yes.
What did you make of it?
I thought it was disgusting. But at the same time, without wanting to defend him, it is the kind of thing that's said in the heat of the moment. But we need to educate people that those kind of things aren't acceptable. You wouldn't say things that were racist terms in the heat of the moment because you know that it's wrong. Saying something like that is, using that word faggot is tantamount to saying, you know, what some of the worst racist terms that you can think of.
That's probably where society has moved forward a fair bit. Gareth, would you agree that society is maybe mirrored rugby in terms of the progression?
Yeah, I do. And actually, I think rugby's probably been a bit of ahead of the curve, to be honest with you. When I came out back in, God, it was 1999, 2000, I think it was, when I was 17 years old, mm-hmm. My rugby club told me to come back and wanted me to be there and said, we don't care whether you're gay, straight or what. So they were very, very accepting back in the sort of late 90s, early 2000s. I think rugby's been a bit more of a shining light than certainly other sports. And I think we've probably managed to, hold up a bit of a mirror that possibly other sports like football probably aren't doing.
Gareth, have you seen people grow in their confidence as well as improve their mental and physical state?
Absolutely. And that's one of the things that I really, really love about teaching these sort of younger lads and who haven't necessarily picked up a ball before. And I say younger lads, actually, some of the people that we've had come through the ranks have been, you know, guys in their 30s and their 40s. We had one guy who's almost in his 50s. And we've seen these people who've never really picked up a rugby ball before and not know the laws of the game, not know what they're doing from that first training session, and are now playing for our second team and playing rugby every single week.
Well, guys, thanks so much for joining us on the pod. Fascinating to hear your thoughts. And congratulations, well done for all the work you're doing. Keep up the good work. Enjoy the rest of your season.
Thanks very much.
Cheers. Thanks a lot for coming on, guys. Brilliant stuff.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Ta-ra. Five Lives Rugby
Union Weekly. Hey, Hayden, it's Hugo here.
Hello.
Yeah, let's get Hayden on. Hayden is from Plymouth. And Hayden, you've just come out of your maths lesson to talk to us, haven't you?
Yes, I have.
So hopefully you'll want this interview to run as long as possible.
Yes, I would.
What are you studying? Well, what maths are you on at the moment? What kind of stuff are you learning?
Oh, we're doing angles.
Is that all hypotenuse and all that kind of business?
Yeah, like Pythagoras. And yeah, it's like a foreign language to me.
Yeah, it sounds like it is to go myself as well, so we won't dwell on it.
I did mind maths, but I find it frustrating. Don't tell a teacher I said this, but you can kind of do all of that stuff on your phone these days.
it's a bit weird with maths because you...
But don't take your phone into your exam and start cheating.
But I think that maybe kids nowadays should be able to take their phones in because they're going to have their phones in real life. Anyway,
we are digressing.
But Hayden, let's talk a bit about you because you're 16 and you're involved with the Plymouth Sports Charity, which meant that you played at Twickenham at half time in the England-Ireland game, didn't you? Tell us all about that.
I led them all out and it was really good to play in front of like 82,000 people who were there.
Yeah, I mean, it was seriously cold. I mean, I was there at the game up in the commentary box. What was it like being down at pitch level? Was it...
It was pretty cold watching, because in the first half, I was just sat in my shorts ready to play.
Oh, no.
Oh my gosh.
But, and it was really cold. But then once we started playing touch on the pitch, I just warmed up because I was getting right into the game.
Tell me, because you're brand new into rugby, so what does playing at Twickenham, having a moment like that, what does that do for you?
It built a lot of confidence for me because I've never done something like that in front of like a massive crowd. Usually we're just on the pitch and we're not really playing in front of any people, so it's boosted my confidence and like just doing stuff around in a crowd of people.
Because before this project, Hayden, you'd not really played much sport before, had you? So tell us what you were like as a person and what you did in your spare time before you started to play rugby with this project.
I wasn't the most well-behaved student in school, you could say. I used to get in a bit of trouble. I just used to think that school was just a waste of time and I could be doing something else. I guess you could say I had a bit of an attitude problem.
Was that with the teachers? Was that not turning up
on
time?
Yeah.
Was it just being unruly? Were you aggressive?
I mainly had a bad attitude towards the teachers, usually.
And how's rugby changed that?
Well, with the training that we do in rugby, we learn different skills and different things that can help us in everyday life, such as teamwork and how to speak to people and discipline. And all of this information has just made me think of how I should respect other people and how they are trying to help me. So why should I stop them from helping me? So it's taught me to help other people to help me. If I didn't take up this project, I would probably still be that guy in the class that's making all the noise and disrupting everything that everyone's just thinking in their mind just to be quiet. It's just so amazing. From my grades last year to my grades now, you can just see like the massive, massive jump that I've done.
That's awesome to hear.
Yeah, it's incredible. Often people talk about, I mean, Nelson Mandela, he spoke about it, the power of sport, how it has the ability to be able to change lives. And that's completely different depending on the personnel. But I think yours is a really positive story. But you've also had some great opportunities whilst playing rugby because you've got to meet the likes of Prince Harry and Johnny Wilkinson. Tell us about that.
It was amazing. It was just that one day of just meeting Prince Harry, it was very honourable because not many people get to meet such a massive figure in the world. I mean, he's like part of the royal family. And yeah. Because they're so... And to meet Johnny Wilkinson, probably the best player of England and that they've ever had. It's just amazing because I used to watch him playing rugby because I've always watched rugby. I've always had more of an interest in rugby than football.
What did they say to you? What did Prince Harry and Johnny have to say to you?
Prince Harry, he said to me how he used to play rugby at like our age and how it had a similar impact on him that it did on us. And it's good to hear that we are going through something and we are learning stuff that Prince Harry has learned, and that we can be like a similar person in like similar stages in life.
I remember Prince Harry, age 16, he went to Eton College, and we played them. And Prince Harry's the same age as my brother, and my brother was playing outside centre that day, and he lined up against Prince Harry. You can imagine it. Prince Harry's running out onto the pitch, but normally you just have like family members on the side of the pitch and a few of your schoolmates or teammates watching. But he had a couple of security guards on the side of the pitch, or bodyguards.
Hey, your brother or...
no, this is Prince Harry. And my brother just saw that he was on the team sheet and was like, right, how many opportunities do you get to play against royalty?
Yeah.
And Prince Harry ran a hard line against my brother. And we loved wrestling. I don't know if you ever watched wrestling as a young kid. But my brother did. And he pretty much chokeslammed him. Chokeslammed Prince Harry into the floor, and the bodyguards weren't quite sure what to do, whether to get onto the pitch because he's effectively been assaulted. Anyway, my brother dominated him, and he dines out on that forever.
And Hayden, tell us, you've got into rugby big time over the last few weeks and months. What's going wrong with England? Your view, you had the best view in the house to watch England lose again. What's your verdict on where England go from here and what they need to improve?
I watched the all the Six Nations. And at the beginning of this Six Nations, England were doing really well. So they must have changed something or done something, because in the past like three games, something's obviously gone wrong because they've lost like the last three games. I'd say that they need to step up their defence, because in like the first 10 minutes of the England and Ireland game, Ireland had already scored a try. So I think that England need to just pick up their defence system and just improve that. The rest of the positions and everything, they were doing really well.
Mm.
But I think they just need to pick up on their defence.
Who's your favourite England player?
Ooh, Danny Kerr.
Yes, good man. He'll be thrilled. He's he's one of the co-hosts on the pod. He's not with us, unfortunately, today. He's doing what he does, and he's training really hard. So what we will do is get a message. So make sure you listen out to the pod, and we'll get Danny to say hello.
That'd be amazing.
So tell us, what's next for Hayden? We've seen this transition in your behaviour, in your grades, and your enjoyment into rugby. So I guess, what are the next steps for Hayden? What are your goals?
Possibly, and most likely, coaching other people, telling them skills that I've learnt from rugby and how I can help younger people join a club, play as much rugby as I can.
Would you like to coach kids that were like yourself, potentially, that had maybe behavioural issues at school, or are you talking about elite level coaching?
Yeah, I would. I would like to do that because, I could relate to them. I could say, "Oh, yeah, I used to go through this. I know what you're experiencing. But if you do this, like I did, then it can help you massively and have a massive impact in every single way."
I can only just applaud you for the way in which you've really. I love rugby. We're all sat here because we love rugby. That's why we're having this conversation. But the fact that you've kind of adopted it and now you want to pass that message on just speaks volumes for the character that you've built.
Thank you.
Well, I was going to say sorry for taking you away from your maths class, but it sounds like we sorted you out a little bit. but no, thanks for being so open and honest with us, and mate, good luck for everything that holds you in the future.
Thank you.
Hey Hayden, Danny Kerr here, just finished training. I just wanted to send you a little message, mate, because I hear that your rugby is going incredibly well at the moment, and also that your grades and schoolwork have gone through the roof as well. I hear you do some stuff with Try for Change, which is brilliant. It's a wonderful initiative. But just wanted to send you a message to say all the best. Great work, everything that you're doing so far is brilliant. Keep up the good work, and hopefully get to see you soon. Cheers, mate. Bye-bye.
Five Lives Rugby Union Weekly.
Do you know what? It's amazing. We talk about rugby a lot and we talk to some very special guests. We said that right from the start. But it's amazing to hear for people who maybe haven't made it to that elite level, but in many ways their life have been changed dramatically more so than some of the superstars we speak to. Whether it's from Manchester Spartans or 16-year-old Hayden, they've all been profoundly impacted for the better through the sport that we love, rugby.
Yeah, not everyone will have made it this far on the podcast. I'm sure some people may have switched off once they realised it wasn't Six Nations chat. But thank you to all of you who have taken the time to listen to this special podcast.
To support Try for Change and donate to Sport Relief, go to sportrelief.com/England Rugby.
And if you know anyone who might be able to take inspiration from this episode, please do tell them about it. We'd love it if it could help someone.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for taking the time to download this BBC podcast. For the latest rugby union news, interviews and highlights, click, tap or swipe bbc.co.uk/rugbyunion.